Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, good morning, sir. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Are weeks like last week in your profession, are they like the Super Bowl week, you know, when SCOTUS is in session and hearing arguments and issuing opinions, you guys get all like jazzed up and go to like lawyer bars and watch it happen live?
They're interesting reading, but you know, for a lot of us, for a lot of different areas of law, these cases don't always affect our day-to-day practice. The employment one does, obviously, but not all of them.
What was the highlight of last week for you when looking at the compilation of SCOTUS rulings that came down?
Well, it's always a challenge for me to try to read these opinions together and try to figure out what the philosophy of the Roberts Court is, especially now with two new justices appointed by President Trump. And then dealing with all of the misunderstandings on both sides of what the heck the case actually said.
Mm-hmm.
The Bostock Clayton County case, the employment one, I think it's significant that, you know, I read Gorsuch's opinion. He's been criticized for using a textualist argument to expand the Title VII of the Civil Rights Act to protect sexual orientation or homosexuals and transgenders in employment. But when you think about it, I don't think anybody would disagree that someone should be nobody's going to say that someone should be fired because of that they're homosexual or transgender. And if you read the case, it makes a lot of sense. And he specifically, for those, I know a lot of folks that are conservatives are saying the slippery slope argument, this is going to lead to, you know, men competing against women in sports and, you know, the bathroom issue. And he makes it very clear in the opinion. He said, we're not talking about bathrooms or locker rooms or anything else. The only question before us is whether an employer who fires somebody simply for being homosexual, transgender, is discharged or otherwise discriminated against that individual because of such individual sex. That's the only thing the case decides.
And again, it's tough on these because when you start posing hypotheticals and now obviously we're speculating. But do you know if the employment ruling would potentially make it easier for somebody who, say, was legitimately fired, right, over their work, right, or the lack of performance, mm-hmm. would that create a scenario where they now have a better opportunity to claim bias as opposed to performance with the SCOTUS ruling? And I guess that could also apply to somebody applying for a job, whereas the potential employer would say, well, they didn't fit the criteria that we had. Does the SCOTUS ruling then allow that person to go, well, they may be saying that, but clearly they were discriminating against me because I am part of the LGBTQ community?
Perhaps, but for most states, state law already prohibits that. If somebody already has that scenario where you could, I mean, there's a lot of times where if we're dealing with an employment issue, we have to look at both federal law and state law because state law protects a lot broader array of groups than what the federal law does. So this really applies, this case really has implications only for those states that don't have those state protections already in place. But I think it's interesting, you know, if you think back to the history of different areas of the Supreme Court, Warren Burger, who was the Chief Justice from 1969 until 1986 before the Chief Justice Rehnquist, and who was a St. Paul native and a graduate of my law school, would sometimes vote with the majority when he knew that they were going to win anyway, they were going to prevail anyways, and write the opinion, because the Chief Justice can assign the opinion, to try to narrow the scope of the ruling. And so you have a 6-3 decision here. Part of me thinks that Justice Gorsuch voted with the majority to get the, you know, and maybe perhaps wrote this in a way that would have been not as broad as what some would want it. But he made it clear. It's limited to employment. So I think everybody's getting a little bit their nose out of joint for no reason, trying to argue this parade of horribles. That's what the Supreme Court does. There'll be 6 other cases that decide different aspects of the Civil Rights Act related to sexual orientation and a gender identity, so I don't know why everybody's getting all upset about it.
Well, I think people are used to living in an environment where it's either a win or a loss. You either won or you lost. And all of these cases that were decided last week were framed as losses for the Trump administration. Right? You know?
Right. So, in part, the media doesn't help explaining.
Yeah.
You know, the only way to understand what a Supreme Court does in one of its opinions is to go to their website, and they're all publicly available, downloadable for free, and downloading the opinions and reading them. They're actually pretty interesting. So mm-hmm. anybody that really wants to learn about what they're actually saying and doing, go right to the source and get the opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the problem when you talk about SCOTUS cases, when you talk about these laws that are being, you know, interpreted or honed down through the judicial system like that, it's not as simple as, well, you won or you lost. Like Andrew Langer was talking about with the DACA case. This isn't over. You know, this is just one step in the process. You know, President Obama put together a very complicated, unconstitutional, illegal program, but it's been in effect for so long that it is very difficult and complicated to undo without causing massive harm to a lot of people. And I think that's one of the aspects that the Supreme Court is considering.
That's exactly right, Drew. You know, I listened to your discussion with Andrew Langer about that case, and I agree with everything you guys were saying. The case does not say DACA stays.
Yeah.
In fact, the court says the opposite. It is it was not passed legally. It's an invalid law. The bad part about this ruling is the precedent that it's creating that this was a law that was put on the books by executive order. Everybody agrees it's invalid because of how it was enacted. But to say that the next administration has to follow the procedures of the Administrative Procedures Act to repeal it when those procedures weren't followed in the first place to enact it, that's problematic.
It is problematic.
And, you know, and it almost is like, you know, Chief Justice Roberts, I don't know if you want to classify him as a never Trumper or if he just likes going to D.C. cocktail parties. But he just likes to, I think, to infuriate the Trump administration. He does everything possible to deny them any sort of a win. And I think in his process here, in his reasoning, which I question on this one, I think he's not thinking of the larger picture of what this could mean going forward. I mean, for example, let's say that he loses in November. Can President Trump quick put something in, some weird law in place, the executive order, and make President Biden have to follow the APA to repeal it? I mean, the slippery slope argument is in this case.
Chief Justice John Roberts is under the microscope as the Supreme Court prepares to issue its first major ruling on abortion rights in the Trump era. Because according to the article in The Hill, I'm curious if you agree with this. This would give, according to The Hill, the clearest indication yet of the court's willingness to revisit protections that were first granted in Roe versus Wade. The decision could come as early as today. Roberts did join the narrow majorities last week, as we talked about in those two other rulings. The abortion rights case differs from the other in a key respect, whereas the LGBT and DACA disputes asked the justices to interpret the meaning of federal law, the Louisiana case asked the justices to weigh their own past rulings on abortion. How do you, any sort of expectation on where this might end up when they make the ruling?
Well, it's interesting. There's this 2016 case called Hellerstedt, which looked at a similar Texas law. This is the law that says that doctors performing abortions in that particular state have to have admitting privileges at a hospital. This is now dealing with a Louisiana law that's very similar. The court in the Hellerstedt case said that that law was unconstitutional. I don't think, of course, that was down at a time when Justice Kennedy was still on the court, but I think you can make the argument that Chief Justice Roberts as the swing vote is even less conservative than Justice Kennedy. So I'm not expecting the court to overturn its decision in Hellerstedt. You know, Chief Justice Roberts loves precedent, and so I don't, especially as recent as that, I don't see them changing course on this. So I expect the district court struck down the law under the Hellestrat case. The Court of Appeals reversed. I would expect the Supreme Court to reverse and go back to the district court ruling on this, and they're going to say that law is unconstitutional.
Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, always a valuable expertise and perspective when you join us on the program, and we very much appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, guys.